broadcasting from KUCR Studios in UC Riverside, this is the Highlander Newsroom. I'm your host, Colin Markovich, joined today by...
Jake Rich, Managing Editor.
Amy Zahn, Assistant News Editor.
Crystal Mims, Assistant Radar Editor.
Hello, everybody. Thank you all for joining the newsroom. How's it going?
Pretty good.
And this is Amy. This is your first time here at the newsroom, right?
Yeah, it's my very first time.
How does it feel? What's it like being in a dark room filled with other people?
A little bit nervous, honestly, but I'm sure I'll get over that soon, hopefully.
It's a personal experience that I think everybody has to go through as they mature and become an adult.
Being on a talk radio?
Yes.
For their newspaper on campus?
Maybe, but
every single person.
But definitely on talk radio, yes, at least.
Become an adult, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess we have not very many adults in the world, then.
This is a true statement. So thank you, everybody, for joining us this week on the Highlander Newsroom. We're going to be talking about quite a few things this week. First of all, there's a proposal by Janet Napolitano, who is, of course, the UC president. She wants to tie athletic directors and coaches' bonuses to student-athletes' grades, which is something that's brand new. The UC is, well, the UC, only I think one coach in the UC has done that before. We'll talk a little bit more about it as we get into the details. And then following that, there's also a proposal that's in the U.S. Senate right now that would simplify the FAFSA application, which is what students have to file to get financial aid. So we're going to take a look at some of the changes going on in that. And finally, ASUCR, which is the student government here at UCR, is proposing looking into some textbooks and why textbooks are so expensive and why students have to buy some of them. So we'll be talking a little bit about our textbook experiences here at UCR and probably a bunch of other non-related, non-sequitur stuff as well, judging by the way the show usually goes. So it's up to you guys to make that happen. Don't let me down now that I've promised our viewership that there will be non-sequiturs.
Purple.
Nazi cats.
Already been accomplished. I've checked that box.
Well, you can check it again.
It's been double-checked. All right, so first thing that's on the docket is...
What were we talking about again?
Okay. It's funny you should ask, because we are talking about Janet Napolitano, who is... actually, she's meeting with the Board of Regents later today. What will probably come up is her new proposal, which she unveiled late last week, which would, again, as we mentioned, tie athletic director and coach salaries to the academic performance of their student athletes. Each campus would have to establish a minimum level of academic performance that teams must maintain for the coaches and athletic directors to be eligible to receive any academic or athletic performance incentive awards. Performance incentive awards, of course, being bonuses. So this is coming in the wake of a bunch of controversy over there was that thing in University of North Carolina where there was like a whole shadow curriculum that was developed for student athletes to basically make sure that they kept their grades up.
Sketchy stuff.
Really super sketchy. We wrote an editorial on it, I think, last year. You guys can check it out if you want. Shameless plug. Also, there was a thing at UC Berkeley where they found out that I think the men's basketball team, I think it was, I could be mistaken, their graduation rate for people involved in that program was declining over the years, which is not good, needless to say. So this kind of comes as a response to that. So what do you all think about this proposal that Janet Napolitano is making? Is it time for this kind of thing, or does it go too far? What do you all think?
I kind of think it'll put a strain on the coach-student-athlete relationship, depending on how the coaches take it. Like, they might be like, you guys better get your grades up, or, you know. So, I don't know. I feel like in that way it could kind of be negative, but I do think it will help student-athletes, like, kind of be put on the same level with everyone else as far as actually getting good grades and not having any, like, curves and, like, their grading and everything. So,
I mean, I like that they're being put on the same level, but I don't know if I like, and I guess they're kind of in a way punishing the coaches for somebody else's academic performance. I don't know if the coaches are the correct people to be targeting here, because they're in charge of making sure the teams do well. The athletes are in charge of their own grades, so I don't know if their grades should be tied in with the coach's compensation, if you guys know what I'm saying.
Do you think coaches are responsible for, like, student-athletes' overall well-being when it comes to campus? And that, of course, would include, like, academics and making sure that they're, like doing okay, that they're not, like, dying.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't think they should ignore a student if they're dying. But honestly, I've always thought that a coach is there to be a coach in the sport that they're coaching. If a student needs academic help, then the student should seek academic help from the proper avenues, I think. I don't know if that's really the coach's place, necessarily.
I don't know. It's, like, it's interesting, just, you know, following college sports for a while, that I feel like in almost any, like, you know, school-related sports things, whether that's high school or college, it's a little different than just being a coach, like, well, sounds funny, like, professionally or in Little League, but those are kind of the two different, I don't know, it's basically like, I think the coach does have to a certain extent, an extra level of responsibility because, you know, I don't know if this makes sense, but certain schools, like, you know, you have to get to a certain academic level to get there, and of course, you know, the NCAA has had their whole campaign. You know, it's like, you know, I'm a student athlete, but I won't always be. So maybe not. You know, I don't know if it's good directly tying the coaches directly to the GPA or such, but I do think it's important for coaches to remind students that, you know, that they're going to a school, you know, and unless you're, like, the top prospect in one of the drafts, you know, you're probably not going to play professionally.
The way the system works that Napolitano proposes, I believe that it creates some sort of aggregate score for the team, and then if that score drops below a certain level, then the bonuses would be withheld at that point, so it wouldn't really go for an individual player necessarily, but it would apply to the team as a whole. And that being said, under the metric that the UC is suggesting, the only team right now that would fall under that threshold, the only team in the entire UC system is UCR's men's basketball team.
Really?
Yes.
Out of all the athletic teams?
Out of all the athletic teams in the entire UC. So I don't know, does that say anything about UCR? Does that say anything about our team? Does that say that the system is rigged? What are we, or is it just like an unfortunate coincidence? Will this, like, affect UCR disproportionately?
Well, I mean, I think it's motivation, certainly, because I think the coach certainly wants his bonus. So
wasn't there a thing a couple years ago, 3 years ago, when the men's basketball team got dropped from NCAA contention because
we got put on, I believe it was some kind of academic probation. We couldn't win. We couldn't get not that we're gonna we would have gotten there anyways, but we couldn't have possibly reached the NCAA tournament because we did not meet a certain level. So, I mean, it's really hard to say because, you know, like Amy was saying, it's hard to tie it to the coaches somehow. But you know, you need to get a college team who is going to a school, playing for a school, to have, you know, a certain level of academic success. I mean, that just seems inherent in going to a school, right?
What about the number of hours that student-athletes have to work with? Because reading a lot of stories told by student-athletes during their, I guess, tenure as a student-athlete, they always say that the amount of hours they had to put in for the athletics position was basically like a job, and because it was so much time that they had to do, that it's hard to balance doing the athletics with the academics. And if that's the case, does the coach have a responsibility to let up on some of the athletic training or work so that students can dedicate more time to their academics? Or should coaches be more, should they pay more attention to the athletic side of things, which is, after all, their job description?
I think it can kind of be hard just because they feel like they're there to be a coach. Like you guys were saying, of course, like, we're in college, they should be focusing on academics. But I don't know. I think it's hard, but I'm just hoping this also won't make the shadiness more shady, because now coaches are kind of going to be like, my money's on the line.
Mm-hmm.
So finding ways to get their grades up is probably going to be a priority.
One of the concerns was that student-athletes might be dropped more readily from teams because if their academics are lower, because that would withhold in bonuses from coaches. So I don't see any feasible way to kind of, like, avoid that with this sort of system. I don't know if anybody else has any suggestions on that front, but that's something that I would say on that, is that that's something that we should be concerned about.
Yeah, well, like, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a harsh thing. Is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, obviously it is. Okay, when you're talking about schools bigger than UCR with more nationally recognized sports, let's say your star player is dropped. I mean, I guess that's more where that concern is. It's not as big of a concern for somewhere like UCR. I mean, it is, but it's not. You know what I mean? But, I mean, I don't really think it's fair to the rest of us students if any of these guys are getting a free pass, and not to say they are getting a free pass because they're doing more, you know, with sports that we're not doing, but it's a really gray area.
Mm. Well, speaking of free passes, let's talk about the financial aid application and and how students who are on the financial aid are getting free passes from the government to enroll in college when they can't afford it. I'm just kidding. Okay. You guys were supposed to laugh at that. I'm sorry. I'm okay.
I'm a free rider. I am taking from the government.
The FAFSA, everybody knows what the FAFSA is. I think everybody's filled it out once, maybe twice, maybe three times, maybe five times, maybe 70 times.
I don't think it works after 70 times.
I'm sure there are some people who have figured out a way.
Are you implying that people are gaming the system?
No, I'm just implying that people who are 70 may go to community college and want to get a degree.
70 times.
I mean, there are 108 questions on that thing. I don't know about filling it out 70 times.
Those of you who know Eastern mythology know that 108 is a very, very unlucky number. So I just think it's kind of ironic that 108 is the number of questions that is on the FAFSA. But there is now a proposal to simplify that to two questions, which is basically just family income and family size. So based off of the number of people in your family and the amount of income that your family makes, boom, two questions filled out, FAFSA done. Record time. I think that was like 30 seconds. Is this proposal going to work?
I mean, what else do they really need to know to decide how much aid you get?
The other 106 questions, presumably.
What are the, like, just an example?
They ask about your assets, whether or not you own a house, because that counts as, like, money. If you have, how much money you have, like, in your accounts, if you have any bank accounts. I haven't filled out my FAFSA in about a year. It's getting time to fill it out again.
Mm-hmm.
They're due March 1st, public service announcement. March 2nd. Mm-hmm. Revised public service announcement.
March 2nd.
I was just saying it so that people would fill it out early, and then they wouldn't have to worry about the deadline.
Good idea.
Yes. That was my intent all along. But, like, questions like that, and I know, speaking personally, that the first time I filled it out, I didn't know that there were that many questions. And so we were going, like, I was going to go through it and kind of do it, like, myself, and then, like, 10 questions, and I was like, Oh no, this isn't working. Help me. And so then me and my dad had to, like, spend, like, 3 hours sitting together at the table, like, figuring everything out, getting, like, our records and stuff just to make sure it was filled out correctly. And then I believe about 4/5 of the way into it, our internet conked out. So we had to do it all over again.
Oh, that's terrible.
It was an incredible bonding experience that I spent with my family. And I think everybody should have those bonding moments.
Talking
filling
about
out FAFSA
assets.
Forms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talking about assets with your, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. but I don't know. What do we think of this simplification thing? Is it going to work, or do you guys have any FAFSA horror stories that you want to share?
I think it sounds great. Because, yeah, I just remember it being really annoying, and anything to make it easier sounds good to me, so...
I mean, it would probably cost the federal government a little bit more, since people, it's now more accessible, and people, more people will fill it out. I believe that about more than 1 million high school seniors did not complete a FAFSA, and I believe that there were 21 million applications overall in 2013 to 2014, so that number was likely to go up.
But couldn't they save tons of time and therefore, you know, labor, you know, paying people for their labor, because the processing them would be way faster? Like, you could go over, like, you could go over a ton in the space that you would normally take to go over one.
That is true. We can turn this into a math problem.
No, let's not do that. No, I take that back.
To be able to get the FAFSA.
I redact my statement.
I've been avoiding math since high school.
Me too.
So I'm not the only one who hasn't taken... The last math class I took, I am now a fourth year in college. I can't believe I just said that. And I have not taken
Let the non sequiturs begin.
I have not taken a math class since my junior year of high school.
Oh my gosh, me too.
I haven't taken one since my senior year, and I'm a fourth year too, so it's almost the same.
Probability and statistics.
Like,
so it wasn't even
calculus.
Real.
Calculus. Me too. I can't
do it. You actually took calculus?
Unfortunately.
I avoided calculus. I didn't even take pre-cal.
Oh, pre-cal was the worst. It was way harder than calculus. I don't know why they call it pre.
What?
I thought it was.
No, calculus
really?
Was the bane of my existence.
No, see, calculus I didn't think was that bad, but pre-calculus was just... I couldn't do pre-calculus. I don't know. That's just... I've always thought calc was
what
a little
that
easier.
It was like AP, BC, calc people that you...
Oh, I didn't take BC. No, I did AB. Mm.
Wait, you took AP?
No, AP. What? AP calculus AB, though, not BC.
To be fair, our school only offered AP calculus.
Really?
We didn't have...
You had to take the AP.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. No.
I'm not going to comment on my AP score, but I did take it.
Half. Did they give out halves?
Half.
So this is how you can tell that the Highlander Newsroom is predominated by chess majors.
Yes.
Classical studies. No one knows what we are. There are two of us.
We're all chess majors. We are all chess majors, but there is one... Also CNAS major.
I'm also CNAS. Yes.
So we have half a CNAS major because you're a double major, right? So,
yeah.
Okay.
So the ratio, is approximately what?
Stop doing math. Stop it.
It doesn't even make sense. It's half a person.
Yeah. So it'd be what, 1/8? It would be about 17.
I don't know.
17%.
You're the CNAS major.
We're chess majors. So we can't do this.
So about FAFSA.
About 12%, more or less.
When I've done doing FAFSA the past 2 years, I mean, it's taken some time to get, like, you know, tax info or whatever. But even though it's really long, I've kind of got it down to a science. Like, I don't know. I've got, like, the info I need. And because I've done it a couple times now, like, I just know exactly what to put almost in everyone. I mean, I have to ask my parents for a little bit of help. But, and they can answer questions for me. But I don't know, it's 108 questions, but not all the 108 questions apply to everybody. I'm just playing devil's advocate here, you know. And not all those apply to everybody, and some of them are extremely, like, the same or just slightly varied and easy to fill out. I still agree that, you know, a simplified FAFSA probably would be easier, but...
And before everybody gets all super excited, California is considering, if the FAFSA is simplified, California is considering putting in a supplemental application so that for everybody to receive Cal grants and the statewide financial aid. So y'all still have to fill out a different application for Cal grants, maybe.
But I'm just wondering if for all these years they were convinced they needed 108 questions, why are they suddenly just like, oh, you know what, you guys? We're just going to have 2 questions. That sounds like a good idea.
That is a little weird.
Yeah, this is shady.
It's being proposed by a Republican senator from Tennessee, which is also the place where Obama's proposal for free community college was pioneered. So maybe something's in the water in Tennessee. I don't know.
Something in the water. Okay.
But, I mean, we'll see if it gets through this Congress. We'll see how it works out. But it's something to keep an eye on, definitely. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Highlander Newsroom broadcast on KUCR 88.3 FM or listening live on the KUCR website, kucr.org, or from the KUCR app, which you can download from the iTunes store, or... Dang it.
Oh, no!
I was almost there.
If you have an Android
app,
user...
The TuneIn app from Android.
No, on the Google Play Store for Android phones, there's the TuneIn app, and you can just search for KUCR, and you can tune in there. Nice try.
I see what you did there.
Very close.
All right. So for those of you just joining us, we're now about to talk about textbooks, which are the bane of every college student's existence.
I thought that was math, as we just decided.
Yes.
What about math textbooks?
Oh, God. No, you're right. Don't even say those two words.
I support the existence of the things that happened in Fahrenheit 451 only for math textbooks.
Whoa. No.
Wait a minute. Burning math textbooks? Yes.
Yes.
I'm just kidding, everybody. No, don't stereotype chess majors based on my words.
No, actually, we need math because computers, so. Thank you.
We need math because life.
Yes.
There's a proposal in ASUCR. Amy was actually there to cover the event, so she can actually probably tell it a little bit more detail than I can, but to look into the costs of textbooks offered by professors here at UCR?
It's not really about the cost of the textbooks. It's about the fact that so many professors assign their own books. From what I understood, it wasn't really about textbook affordability. I could be wrong about that, but from what I understood, it's just some of the senators were concerned that if a professor is assigning their own textbook, maybe that's not a good idea because they should be sharing the knowledge contained in the textbook with their students anyway. That was one of the main points brought up at the meeting. So, yeah, I just want to clear it. It's not, at least the way I understood it, it's not really a textbook affordability issue. It's a professors assigning their own textbooks issue.
There's like a hole in this argument. I don't know. It's like professors generally don't make money from their books.
They don't.
Yeah. So that, I don't know if that was part of what they were talking about.
It was a little bit. They were saying that professors shouldn't use students as a source of like profit.
Yeah, that's not relevant really.
No.
And second of all, I think if I read the article correctly, this might have been brought up as well. But that there's some stuff that it's much easier to just assign reading on the textbook. Like, you got to separate your lectures and your reading,
mm-hmm.
right?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I personally don't have a problem with professors assigning their own books. I don't think it's an issue at all, but apparently some people don't agree.
Yeah, as long as they feel like it's going to help, you know, throughout their lecture, I don't see what the problem is.
Well... let me tell a little story. When I was a young, naive college student
time.
who had just gone into UCR and was enrolled in his very first class, it was a philosophy class.
What class?
Critical thinking.
Oh, I know about that class. Sorry, continue.
And the professor there for the class, the very first book I had to buy was the professor's very own book from the bookstore. It wasn't the most expensive book that I had ever bought. But it still comes off kind of shady when at least for me, it made quite a big of an impression because it was my very first class and my very first book I had to buy at, you know, college. So besides the sticker shock of, oh, this book is like $60, like, and I know that's low, but at the time I was like,
it's still kind of high.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I felt like this, maybe it was just this professor's teaching style. But I felt like he was teaching straight from the book, could have taught us all the same thing without it.
Well, in that instance, then I would agree with what they're talking about.
So we can all agree that books are expensive.
Yeah.
I can say that I know for me, I try to avoid buying books as much as I can, at least definitely from the bookstore, maybe from somewhere else if I can get them. My go-to place is actually the public library system. Usually Riverside, the UCR library, has many of the books that are required for classes. I know, speaking personally, I found like about half of them there. Just
as long as you get them early.
As long as you get them early, right, because they go quickly. But if they don't, check out the Riverside County Library or the Riverside Public Library in downtown. They usually have some stuff, or you can request stuff on an interlibrary loan, which is an amazing way to get a book and not having to buy it.
Yeah, used books are great.
Doesn't it say you can't do that on the ILL system? It says this is not to be used for textbooks.
Well, they will never know if you...
Well, they will now, because you just said it over the radio.
But, I mean, like, some of the books that you have to get, like, especially for, like, creative writing or English courses, aren't necessarily textbooks, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm.
You they're, just need them for like, part of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always try to avoid buying textbooks. Like, I'll do anything. Like, I'll, like, look up the PDFs, if there's a PDF file of it, or, like, you know, a lot of the time students help each other out, so they'll post it or something.
We want to be clear that... the Highlander is not endorsing online piracy, and anything here is just the opinion of the statement. But if you decide to go and look up books online, that is entirely something that is out of our control. I think I covered our bases there, right, guys? any other tips and tricks for finding books on the cheap or for nothing at all?
Ask your friends. But give it back and be nice. Because a lot of times people keep a book that has been shared with them for way too long or just not give it back at all.
You sound annoyed.
Well, I've done this, so.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, actually,
wait, it's
no.
been done to you or you've done it, or have you been the culprit?
Both.
Jake.
But No. I haven't read the books yet that I've been loaned, so I'm still giving them back. But my copy of Catch-22, which I got as a gift from a Highlander thing at one point, actually, I let one of my sister's high school friends borrow it. I don't know. No, she wouldn't be listening. There's no way. Okay. Anyways, when I got it back, it was like very water damaged. And I know I'm being very picky, but I just don't like to read from like, weird
curly pages.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, oh, thanks. Whereas my cousin who borrowed one of my books and ruined it, he just bought me a new copy. Just like,
well, that was nice of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if you're gonna borrow something from somebody and you ruin it, you should get them a new one. I don't know.
In 10th grade, I borrowed a book from my English teacher, and I somehow managed to destroy it. I don't remember what I did. Probably water or something. So I just bought her a new one and never said anything and put it back on the shelf. Except the only thing I couldn't replace was her, like, stamp that she put in it that said, like, this is Mrs. So-and-so's book. I don't know if she ever noticed. But I'm sorry if you're listening.
So, I guess, go check out your libraries. Check out
your friends.
Don't do that. This is not a dating advice show, but
it can be.
Loveline on KUCI.
Ask your friends for books. Have them, and you can sort of mostly illegally look at them online. Which
but
we don't endorse that, and we don't support. And if you do it, you're a criminal, and you shouldn't do it, and you should go to jail forever.
That's Amazon only the opinion too. Of Colin.
Amazon too is a good way to go.
Amazon too. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you everybody who listened to our show this week. This has been the Highlander Newsroom on KUCR 88.3 FM. The Newsroom is a co-production of the Highlander Newspaper and KUCR. The opinions expressed on today's show, especially regarding online piracy, belong solely to their owners and do not represent KUCR, the Highlander, or the associated students. Special thanks to Louis Vandenberg, Monica Taylor, Eddie Valencia, Elliot Fong, Tina Bold, and Alex Hill. For Jake Rich.
If you tune in about an hour and a half, plug here, you can hear me again. I'll be playing music for you away from the sprawl from 11 to 1 today.
You can't ever get away from Jake. Amy's on.
Well, nobody told me I was supposed to have a witticism, so I don't have one. I'm sorry, everybody.
You have let the readership, the viewership, the listenership, that's the right one. You've let the listenership down,
Well, that could have been my witticism, you know, kind of witty. I don't have one. I mean, it's kind of cliche, but I'm going to count that as my witticism.
We're moving on. Crystal Mims?
Don't buy earrings from Claire's because it'll be stuck in your ear for like 4 days and you'll be trying to cut it out.
I have a feeling there's a story behind this.
Are you serious?
I am almost sad that we ran out of time.
I actually had a similar experience with Claire's, but, you know.
All right. Well, let those words follow you into the rest of your day. Thank you, everybody, for joining us in the Highlander Newsroom. We hope to see you again next week.